You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Rob Hollis is here. He's got a beard.
Hi, Michael. You're very observant this
morning.
How long
did it take you to grow that?
2.5 weeks.
Good show today. We always have a good show for you. I hope you enjoyed. Even if you don't know someone's name, check it out because you'll learn a lot. I'm certainly learning a lot. Today's guests, they have a huge fan base. These guys are enormously talented. Dulé Hill, James Roday from the hit show Psych. This is a great show. I don't know how many people watch this, but it's quite a few because people are always excited about that. When are those guys on? And, you know, James Roday is in a show called A Million Little Pieces.
Yep, the new show on ABC.
New show on ABC. Dulé Hill's worked forever. West Wing, Suits. Both enormously talented, funny. James directs. Well, you'll hear all sorts of shit. We get personal about relationships on set. We talk about so much goodies. Stay tuned. Let's get inside James Roday and Dulé Hill, the Psych Boys.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Do you guys coordinate what you're going to do? Like, hey, what time are you getting over Rosenbaum's house?
I just assume the Dulé is going to be 20 to 40 minutes late, and I live my life accordingly. And then on a day like today, he sets me up for failure because I come rolling in.
It's the long game.
And he's sitting in the compact.
See, it's a long game, though. You know, I started this from back in, say, about 2008. Just so on this moment today,
yeah,
when I came to do Inside of You, yeah, I could beat Roday to the
punch. Off.
And that was it.
Got to be consistent with it, you know what I'm saying?
Now I'm the jerk.
Now, let me ask you, Dulé, you're a responsible guy. You always seems like you know your lines.
Right, right.
Is that true, James?
Sure, he's prepared to do the work when he gets there, sure.
Now, how late on average would you say Dulé is?
No, I'm exaggerating, but it's a solid 15.
Well, 15 is doable, yeah, right? More than that, then the AD starts coming over to you.
No, it's just 15 times every day times 8 seasons.
8 seasons. You know what I'm saying? But I do come knowing my lines, ready to go.
That's important.
So I make up the time. You know what I mean?
That's true.
James Roday, Dulé Hill, thank you for allowing me to be inside of you today.
Wow, this is weird.
This is great.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean,
that's your funeral, pal.
I was nervous.
It's pretty rotten in
there. Now, we know each other, but... Listen, we know each other, but we don't know each other. We see each other. It's been a long time.
Well, I'm glad that the feeling of closeness is reciprocated by you. I really appreciate it.
I can't even remember the last time I saw you.
Well, look, there's always been a respect. I always thought you guys were funny and sweet and just good guys, had a lot of charisma. And I was like, I love them. I want to work with them. I want to hang out with them. We didn't do that a lot, but when we saw each other around, you have a nice tattoo on your arm.
Thank you, man. It's my family coat of arms.
Really?
Yeah.
My family coat of arms would be a Prozac pill.
That's so small.
I have it. My brother has
specific.
It. Some cousins have it. You know what I'm saying?
It is specific.
But little.
But I'm excited you guys are here. And, you know, it's not always easy. And by the way, did you think for a second, oh, he wants James on there? Oh, he wants Dulé on there? Why can't we do individually? Why are we doing it together? Oh, it's a Psych thing.
I always will take this guy on anything like this because he's way better at it than I am. So
we have a good old time. We have a good old time.
James, you smoke grass. I mean, that's what I get. That's what I gather. You're very relaxed. You're a cool guy. You're funny.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. I wish that I agreed with weed more than I do.
What happens when you smoke grass? And do you like that I called it grass?
Yeah, I like that it's grass. Let's keep it strictly on strictly 70s, early 80s. Let's not go past 84.
Let's not.
Yeah.
Things are going to be rad, and we're going to smoke grass. No, you know, when everyone started smoking weed... I had a couple bad experiences that sort of set me off on the wrong foot. And this was, you know, high schoolish.
Grass. How did you get, I never hear bad experiences with grass.
Yeah, I'm like, what?
I was in Texas. It was probably barely even grass. It probably was actual grass. And by the time I got to college, I just was like, And I feel like I missed the train. I missed the grass train. So I stick with alcohol mostly.
Dulé.
Yes.
Grass.
Have I smoked weed before?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you smoke? You don't smoke a lot.
No. I'm a tap dancer. I grew up around, you know, back, especially when I was back doing Bringing Noise, Bringing the Funk. It was like tap dancers are jazz cats. You know what I'm saying?
And jazz, what does that have to do with smoking? So that you can
tap dances and jazz. I mean, jazz cats smoke weed. That's what they do.
Oh, that's what they do, right?
Yeah, you know what I mean. And tap dancers are jazz cats.
You're getting an education right now.
No, I didn't know that. I didn't assume all jazz people like.
Well, no, I mean,
not people.
Yeah, yeah, jazz cats.
Jazz cats smoke
jazz
weed.
Cats.
Rosenbaum.
Cats.
I mean, and
cats.
I'm not saying everybody does, but like, you know, people smoke weed.
Yeah.
Especially back then, like in the late 90s. You know, when I was in Noise Funk, I smoked right. a lot. There.
But not drinking. You guys aren't big drinkers?
I like to drink.
No, I like to drink, yeah. Yes.
You do?
That I mean, is my family's from Jamaica.
That is my drug of choice, yes.
Yeah. And how often do you drink?
Probably every other day I have a drink.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
it's probably an even split over the 365.
Really? Yeah. 100 and...
and it depends on how much...
that? What is that? 170... Six.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's 176 clean, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Crisp.
You got to have balance in life. You got to have balance.
A doctor once told me that if you take one full month, consecutive month, which for me, of course, was February because it's the shortest, off of drinking, that's all the time your liver requires to refuel and rebuild.
How long?
Rebuild itself. 1 month.
1 month.
Now, we don't know who this doctor is, but.
It was a medical doctor who earned a degree from somewhere. Probably south of our borders. But listen, it makes sense to me because in my mind, it's always like, I don't drink every day. My liver's fine. But it needs the cumulative sort of repair time of, you know, 28 to 30-ish days.
And you have no problem with that, given a little 30-day.
February, man.
February.
It's a good month to do it anyway, right? You watch the Super Bowl and then you take a break. And then you're back to just living the life that you need.
Well, what about on set, though? Not on set. Obviously, you don't drink on set. I mean, maybe you do.
When I'm working, I drink a lot. I don't drink as much.
You don't drink as much.
Because I'm busy. You know, by the time the day is done, then I have to get home and get ready for the next day. So,
and don't you feel like shit? See, with me, with alcohol, if I drink it, not even a beer or something, it just kind of makes me feel like crap.
Not me.
No?
I'm more of a like a scotch or a wine dude.
Yeah, I drink I drink vodka, and I can drink it in copious amounts and not feel anything.
Is that true?
I don't know if that's something you want to be proud of, though.
Well, I mean, if you're going to have a thing that you drink, then it's, you know, you be able to drink it.
Now, you both have something in common. He started dating his co-star in season one of Psych.
Yes.
Season two.
That's correct.
And it lasted 6 years. Seven.
Seven, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You started dating your co-star on Ballers season one, and now you're married.
Yes.
But your unique cases, because it's always the thing not to do. Don't go out with your co-stars. I once was on a movie in Germany, and I made the mistake, and I was young, and she was, we were just, and it just got, it got a little ugly.
You see?
It got uncomfortable, and then it was fine, but it was just like.
Well, see, I got off on a technicality, because technically, I wasn't really a series regular on Ballers. I was just a guest actor on the show.
You were still balling.
So I was visiting.
You were balling.
Oh, I was balling. Once I got with Jasmine Simon, I was definitely balling. You know what I'm saying? But,
right.
But I, you know, I was a guest in that world. You see what I'm saying? Like,
so it wasn't the same. It wasn't, like a lead actor with a lead, actor.
Another, like a lead actor on a comedy show on USA Network.
Like James did.
And then being with another lead actor on a comedy show on USA Network. It wasn't that at all.
Wait, another?
Well, no. Yeah.
You two?
Well, Maggie.
Maggie, for one, well, I thought you said, oh, so just, it was just Maggie.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I have inside scoop. There's a friend of mine. He was my assistant up in Canada. His name's Troy Rudolph. He loves you guys.
I know Troy.
Yes, we know.
We remember
sweet
Troy.
Guy. We love him. Nerdy guy. Troy. Hi, Troy. He'll listen to this. He loves you guys.
What's up, Troy Rudolph?
Yeah.
Now, he said, you know, I think people are in the first season were probably a little worried. Like, oh, my gosh, you know, what's going to happen to the show? I mean, James is dating Maggie Lawson. What's going to happen there? Was there concern? Was there halfway through season one, you're like, I've got to get rid of her. She's going to get rid of me. Or what's going on?
We made it through the first season pretty well. It was like, it was a heavy flirtation. But, you know, we behaved and we figured that that was the right thing to do. And then we went into the off season and things got more serious. And we just sort of made a deal with ourselves that Psych has to come first. And that if we were going to make this ill-advised decision, because it is, no question, that we were going to make our bed, literally, and then we were going to have to lie in it. And we did that.
What were you thinking the whole time, Dulé? Come on.
But no, early on when they first got together, I remember telling Rodé, just don't bring this shit to work. Don't bring this shit to work.
Do you remember those conversations, James?
you know?
Yeah.
Because to me, it's a matter of, as long as y'all are good, then life is good. But if you have issues, and then y'all are arguing,
yeah.
and now you want to come to work, and we have to do a scene where we have to all be very funny, and you all are trying to be shitty with each other, that's not going to work. But they never did. I'm sure that in any relationship, you have disagreements and you have arguments and things like that. They never brought it to work. They both always came with the A game, brought the energy right.
There wasn't any conversations where it's like, how much are you getting for renegotiations, James? I want to know.
Here's a fun piece of gossip.
Ooh,
we pulled off an entire shortened, but final season, not being together without anybody except, you know, Dulé and Tim. Nobody on the crew knew. Mm-hmm. Like, we pulled that off. We wanted it to sort of end the way that it began. And so we just sort of pretended for the kids.
Are you guys friends to this day?
Max and I?
Yeah.
Very close, yes.
Very close. You'll text your caller.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, I don't know how you do that. But that's, you know, because relationships, they never end.
Well, I think relationships can end well as long as the people involved are good people. You know what I'm saying? I think if people involved are not good people, then it's not going to end well. So, for example, like,
Jay
and Maggie, they ended well because they're good people.
They're good people.
Rosenbaum's, you know, his relationships don't end well because, you know, well.
Well, first of all, you said Rosenbaum. And that's what my dad says. He says, that's the correct pronunciation of my name, Rosenbaum. You're the first person who actually got it right. So thank you. B, all my relationships have ended well to a certain degree.
All of my relationships have ended well.
Well, all of a sudden I'm an old Jew. All my relationships ended well. I can't really tell you. What, Rob, go ahead.
Are you friends with all of them still? You call and text them?
Yes, I just got a like from one of my exes on an Instagram post.
Not what I asked at all.
Well, you know, I'm friends with them. In fact, I just texted my, I dated this girl, Danielle Harris. She's a horror movie actress.
Danielle.
She's one of my best friends. She had her second kid. I just texted her the other day. Congratulations. She's like, it's amazing. How's your life going? I'm like, it's going. Fuck off, Rob. What the fuck? He's 29. He's got a kid.
30.
Wow.
30.
Congratulations, Rob.
Congratulations.
Can you believe it? You guys don't have kids.
I do not. Dulé.
I do.
You do have a kid?
Inherited a beautiful daughter.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. How old?
13.
How is that?
Lovely.
Yeah. Isn't it hard?
Lovely. Not at all, actually.
Why?
Well, because she's a wonderful child. That's why.
You also, I mean, I think, you also skipped a lot of the tricky phases.
You know, don't take away my shine, bro.
I'm sorry.
Don't take away my shine.
He missed the terrible twos,
you know what
in
I'm
a
saying?
Big way.
Go talk. And you were a groomsman in the wedding?
I was.
Did you give a speech?
I did. I gave a short speech, but I felt like it was packed with the, like, your daily essentials.
Well, you know, obviously when you have a actor and a writer be one of your groomsmen, you would think that his speech is going to be on point, and it was.
It was.
Yeah.
How long was the speech? And could you summarize it in 1 minute?
It wasn't long.
Highlights.
It wasn't long, and much like Dulé and I's relationship, it was, you know, 80% fun and 20% heart.
Did you cry?
I didn't, but that's just because there was so many tears happening. I felt like somebody needed to, like, keep the shit together.
Really? You know? People were crying.
A lot of
was
tears.
Was your Jamaican family crying?
Some of my Jamaican family was probably crying, yeah.
Who's the biggest crier?
One of the Jamaican family would have been me.
Were you crying?
I did.
It was an emotional.
I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
I think people like...
It was the ugly cry, too.
Was it?
Yeah, those pictures will never get out. It was the ugly cry.
That face you make that only you do in front of a mirror?
Yeah, and you're trying to hold it together, but it really can't. It's like,
I've done that cry. Yeah. Rob, have you done that cry?
Probably.
I don't picture you as someone who cries.
I think at my grandpa's funeral I did.
You did? Why? I mean, because he died. But that's not what I meant. I meant, were you really close with him, or was there something special?
Yeah, and they had the trumpet salute for him, and that's when it happened.
That's when it hit
you. Did you give the ugly cry?
Probably.
How old were you?
Five.
Like 4 years, 5 years ago.
I thought he was going to say I was four. I'm like, what? That doesn't, how do you remember?
The last time I ugly cried was when I saw E.T. in theaters.
Oh, which part?
It was full. It was when he said goodbye.
When he said goodbye. I cry at weird shit, man. I cry at The Price is Right.
Sure.
Mm. You know, I can, like, if someone wins, the underdog, you just could tell that they, you
Their
know,
life is gonna
they
be,
need this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I fucking go nuts.
Yeah.
You know, Jeopardy, not so much.
But The Price is Right, though.
Price is Right.
He's like, and they bid. I mean, if he'd have been $1 more, he would have lost, but he didn't.
So let me ask you this. When you guys started doing Psych, did you Did you immediately get along? Did you meet each other? Because you tested Jeff to see if you matched together, if your comic timing, all that. How many tests were there?
Well, Rodé already had the job.
They already did. Was it a straight off or did you audition for that?
No, I had to test against three other white dudes.
Do you know the white dudes?
One was Paul Campbell. And
who's that?
He's a Canadian actor.
Okay, that's why. I'm kidding. I love Canadians.
Yeah. And
you're
then,
Canadian, aren't you? No, you're from New Mexico.
I'm from Texas.
But that was close, though.
Weren't you born in New Mexico?
You found the region, though. Yes. And that's no, okay. I was born in San Antonio.
Oh.
I'm half Mexican. That might be what's in your head.
Oh, yeah. That's you what are it half is. Mexican.
That's what it is.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Rodriguez. Yeah.
Rodriguez.
Okay.
But I tested against some dudes and got it. And then I read with every single actor. Every single actor that read for Dulé's role. It was a long, exhausting process. And then very close to the end, everybody came into the room pumped up and nervous because, oh my gosh, Dulé Hill from the West Wing is going to come in and test. And it was like, you know, it was a late game swerve, A, to go diverse with the role, and B, to get somebody, you know, who was coming off one of the biggest shows of all time.
Yeah.
So everybody was sort of over the moon. And it kind of shifted the dynamic in a pretty big way because all the sort of nebbishy Alan Ruckey from Ferris Bueller Day Off versions was sort of what we had been looking at.
Right. So outside the box.
Yeah.
Or inside
the box, inside of you.
Inside of you. But, you know, that's it's kind of lightning in a bottle because it had to be perfect timing. Because you were obligated to West Wing. You didn't sign on for that seventh season, but the show ended up not.
I did. While I was on the seventh season, I had committed to a certain number of episodes. We were going to do a certain number of episodes that Charlie was going to be in like five episodes or something like that. So the timing worked out where I was able to go and do the
finale, the pilot and all that stuff.
The pilot, go back, finish the show, and then start Psych.
Did you think it was like when you watched the pilot, you were like, this is going to go for a while?
I thought if they give us a chance, then we could possibly find some gold over a period of time.
Right.
But right off the bat, did I think necessarily, oh, this is going to run for
8 years?
No, not 8 years. No.
Yeah, I felt like there was real potential there that needed to be carved out.
Mm.
Like there were like a couple scenes in the pilot that I were like, okay, if those two scenes are the show, then we could have a lot of fun.
Right.
But, you know, I think at the beginning we were still sort of steeped in this idea that we had to be a procedural mostly with like a light tone.
Right.
And it wasn't until we discovered, you know, relatively early on, because to USA's credit, they did give us the time to sort of find ourselves.
You got to find it. That's what people don't understand. It's like you watch a pilot, you're seeing an essence,
right?
Little morsels of like what could be. And if you don't give it enough time to develop, where was it? Was there that pinnacle moment where you both thought, we got it now. We got this. Now we know what we're doing.
For me, I think I know Dulé's answer, and I agree with him, but I'll take it back one step. For me, it was the last episode of season one into the first episode of season two, both directed by John Landis.
Wow.
And both became arched in a way that the previous episodes weren't. And that was, you know, that was when I think we realized, oh, there's a version of the show where we just do whatever the hell we want. And that's the show.
Now, when you say that, that's improv?
Improv.
Do you improv a lot? What percentage, on honest percentage of each show, is you guys adding stuff and ad-libbing? Or is it just moments and scenes?
It got less and less over the years.
Because they just knew how to write for you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's what's great about collaboration, though, because Rodé was the improv dude. He would be all over the place and finding gold on his own. But then as the writers would see what was coming on screen, they then would start to write towards it. And then, of course, then you would do less improv, but then you would add on to it a little bit more.
Right.
And they would take that, and so it becomes a nice collaborative situation.
Yes. Yeah,
so
in other words, they'd see something, and they write something, they go, yeah, Rodé is going to go this direction,
yeah,
and Dulé is probably going to do this. And they start to write to your strengths.
A simple thing, I think, early on, one of the first nicknames that Rodé gave, Sean gave Gus was Gus Silly Pants Jackson. I think that was one of the early ones.
Right.
That wasn't initially in a part of their dynamic, but as Rodé kept doing it, then they started writing towards it. And then that became obviously one of the great things that fans have always loved about the show was the names that Sean would call Gus.
That's amazing.
Or even the Don't Bees. The Don't Bees weren't originally part of the world anyway. Also,
you know, at Dax Christopher said, you know, he said, does talking about psych ever get old? Now, I have to answer that for me first.
Yeah.
You know, people say Smallville, talking about Smallville. My response is, does it get old? No. I mean, it's something that's the biggest success I've ever had. It was a blast. You know, I did a lot of other things. I do a lot of other things. But if people want to know about that, do you always want to talk about it? No. When you're with your girlfriend, your wife, do you always want to say, hey, let's talk about Psych episode 30. What were you thinking?
Good morning, baby.
No. But how do you guys feel about that?
When Gus went to the...
yeah. I can't do this. Yeah.
Me personally, I don't get tired of talking, but I feel like it's a nice balance. It's just at the right amount of level of talking about it.
Right.
It's not like every day in, day out, I'm always talking about Psych. But I also appreciate the fact that fans have appreciated and enjoyed this world that we created, or at least were a part of being created, that has touched them. So why not?
Shame on anybody who ever gets tired about talking about something that changed their lives. Psych changed my life. Psych was an opportunity that, you know, changed everything for me, and not just as an actor, but it's what allowed me to start directing. It's like, it sort of was the linchpin for everything that came after it. And I owe that show and the fans of that show so much. And I'll stop and talk about it with anybody.
Inside of You is brought to you by Shopify. If you haven't used Shopify and you're starting your own business, I don't know who you are. I don't even want to talk to you, because Shopify is so easy to use. It is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. And it's so easy to manage and navigate. For instance, on Talkville and Inside of You, I do it all. I see what the best product selling is. I see what's the least product selling is. I can easily check how much money I've made for the month. It's easy to add a product. It's all so simple. I can do it. It's right there for you. It's just so easy to use. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere.
From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered.
Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms.
And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/inside, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/inside now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/inside, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Inside of You is brought to you by Nutrafol. Well, it's apropos. It's, you know, it's good that we're talking about Nutrafol, because, hair thinning impacts a lot of us. In fact, me, it's starting to affect me. Over half of us will experience hair thinning at some point in our lives. It's not only common, it's normal. And you should join over 1 million people who are doing something about it with Nutrafol. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement. Number one, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding.
Hair thinning is complicated. The problem is it actually could be much bigger than your hair alone. Like your skin, hair is a reflection of your health, and internal factors can impact the way your hair looks, feels, and grows.
Nutrafol's whole-body approach multi-targets possible underlying root causes like stress, hormone fluctuations, and nutrient gaps for visibly thicker, stronger hair.
When it comes to thinning hair, there are many possible root causes at play, and Nutrafol helps address them through a multi-targeted whole body approach.
Nutrafol helps support hair growth from within by targeting possible key root causes of thinning, stress, hormones, environment, nutrition, lifestyle, and metabolism through whole body health.
While many supplements rely solely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests final formulations to ensure their efficacy.
In Nutrafol's own clinical study, 72% of men saw more scalp coverage after taking Nutrafol men's hair growth supplement for 6 months, and 86% of women saw improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol women's hair growth supplement for 6 months. Take their hair wellness quiz at Nutrafol.com for a personalized hair health plan based on your specific possible root causes.
With Nutrafol, getting help building a hair growth routine is simple. Purchase online, no prescription or doctor's visits required, free shipping and automated deliveries ensure you'll never miss a day. You could see results in 3 to 6 months.
Take the first step to help you see visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter promo code INSIDE. Find out why over 4,500 professionals and stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com. Promo code INSIDE.
That's Nutrafol.com, promo code INSIDE.
Find out why 4,500 professionals and stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code INSIDE. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code INSIDE.
Take me back a little. You're doing theater.
I was a New York theater kid. I came out of NYU with a theater chip on my shoulder and a good bartending gig in Union Square, and I figured that was an honorable life.
Yeah.
And then before I knew it, I had gotten cast in a TV series, and it brought me to Los Angeles, but I still very much had the New York theater mentality, and I was kind of, I wasn't a jerk, but artistically I sort of had a, like, I don't know if I feel like this material might not be up to par sort of thing going on. And I got the best piece of advice that I've ever gotten in my career from an actor named Michael Rispoli, a wonderful character actor who's been around for a long time. And he sat me down and he said, look, kid, I get it, but I'm going to do you a favor. And then he phantom knocked the chip off my shoulder and explained how fleeting this business is. And how there's always something that you can learn from every job, and that, walking around like, you know, your shit doesn't stink is not going to get you anywhere. And luckily I got that advice at 23.
And you really, that hit you.
It hit me right between the eyes.
Isn't it amazing? Like sometimes people say shit all the time that seems profound at the moment and it's just sort of ephemeral, right? And then somebody will say something that just resonates forever. And those are rare.
Mm-hmm. And the truth is, I wanted to be a sponge. I wanted to learn as much as I could. So to hear that from an actor who had been doing it for, 25, 30 years, I just took it at face value and I was like, yep, no more of that.
Really? So, I probably would have walked away going, what was it I said that made him think I had a chip on my shoulder?
I think I was talking about theater a lot, and I think I was probably overly critical of the first few scripts that came in. I mean, it wasn't a great show, but that's part of what we do. You sometimes you get lucky and you're on great stuff. And
were you a hater? Do you think like look, there's moments in our lives.
Yeah.
Like I'm looking at you guys right now, and I know Rob is. Sometimes we sit there and go, oh, that song sucks. That movie was a piece of shit. Do you find yourself trying to get better? Are you rude? Like now I find myself rooting for people. Yeah. Like, hey, good for him. Good for her. It's a better energy. It's healthy. There was a time in my life where I'm sure I was like, well, am I not doing that role? Where was my audition? I could have been like the... You're an idiot, but you're young and stupid. Yeah. Did you go through that stage?
It's a very sort of specific niche wherein I find myself being a hater, and that's usually with horror, just because I'm a huge horror geek, and I want horror to be better, and I don't settle for a decent horror movie being heralded as like, oh my gosh, this is a game changer. Like, I can't do it.
Why are we not hanging out? Do you understand that that's exactly my mentality with horror?
Yeah.
I watch John Heder, Napoleon Dynamite. Yeah. He and I and his Mormon friends and my non-Mormon friends watch horror movies every week
one night, B movies, things that are more obscure. We look for great horror movies, and usually we don't find them. But when a good movie comes, like the Hereditary came, you know, that they said this is going to be the biggest movie, and I liked it, but I was, the hype wasn't, you know.
It's a first act in search of a movie.
But I think, but I think the problem is with horror movies in the 70s, in the 60s, 70s, even 80s, early 90s, there's the technology. You didn't have a cell phone to call for help. You didn't have, there was sort of a helplessness, and that's missing. And so when you can find that on those rare movies.
Without having to set it in period, because that's sort of cheating. But
it's cheating.
But it does get rid of
it. And it's hard to be original. But yes, there are very few horror movies that I just shit my pants on.
Yeah.
Well, somebody here just directed a horror movie.
Rob?
Yep.
I know you directed horror.
I want to hear about it. I want to hear about it now.
James, let me hear about this.
No, I just.
Well, why are you just assuming it's James?
Well, you just
ain't this something. Like,
well, you know what? Wow. I was going to bring this up.
Wow.
I'm going to go back to
it. It's called Bloody Tap Dancer. It's called Bloody Tap Dancer.
I would see that. That's an original title. No, it should be Grass Smoking Cat.
Jazz Cats.
Bloody Jazz Cats.
Jazz Cats.
No, I just wrapped Friday night. I wrapped a little. It's a Blumhouse Hulu team up.
Oh.
They're doing 12 standalone features, each loosely based on a holiday. So there'll be one each month.
Just say yours is an Easter.
No, mine is March. It'll air in March for International Women's Day. And
nice.
It's one of those things where you had to sign like
confidentiality.
You get to not talk too much about the plot and stuff. And to be fair, you pull a couple threads and it kind of ruins the movies for anybody who hasn't seen it. But what I can say is I was humbled and surrounded by so many talented people. And we took a very ambitious project and made it in about 15 days for a bag of peanuts.
Two questions.
Yeah.
One, are there at least three moments where you go, holy shit.
Yes.
That's all I want. Yeah. Number two, could I potentially be in your next one?
Yes. Yes.
His next one is going to be called Jazz Cats.
Jazz Cats. Bloody Jazz Cats coming to you.
Yeah.
So what's funny is you went on to, so that Psych was really, like you say, that was the moment.
Yeah.
It changed everything. Got you to be able to direct more. And Dulay, you were already a success story in terms of like your career. You were on one of the biggest shows ever.
Yeah, I was definitely, yeah.
But you were always working. Since you were a kid, you were on telethons and tap dancing with, I mean, who does that?
What a bizarre thing. Since you were a kid, man, you were on the telethon circuit.
What's his name? I read about it. What's his name?
Jerry Lewis.
You're 10 years old, right? What was I doing at 10 years old? Rob, what were you doing?
Oh, that's funny.
School.
Okay. He gives me, did you notice how when I give him say something, he gives me a direct answer? Oh, school. I was in school. There's no school. I was doing school. I mean, but what I'm trying to say is that you were working at a young age.
Yes.
You were doing already big things. The telethon might not have been the biggest. I didn't know where to go. Fuck you, Rodé Rodriguez.
Man, I started at a young age. I started at the age of 10. It was my first gig.
When were you making money?
Age of 10. I understudied Savion Glover on Broadway in The Tap Dance Kid. And then I did the lead on the national tour for a year with Harold Nicholas of the Nicholas Brothers. But I mean, I didn't really know what it was at the time. I was really doing it because I had the opportunity and I loved to dance and I thought it was something fun. But I'm very aware that my journey has been a blessed journey. There's no confusion in my mind. I don't take myself too seriously. I don't take the journey. I don't chalk it up as my own, like, this is what I did. I'm like, no, 10 years old, you went on a show called The Tap Dance Kid, came to your dance school. You tapped and sang He's Got a Whole World. He got the whole world in his hands. And next thing you know, you're understudying Savion Glover on Broadway, who wasn't Savion Glover at the time. He was another cat who got a gig.
He was DJ Victory.
Yeah. But I mean, it's been a blessed journey. Then one thing has led to another. I've gone through some droughts of not working, but not long droughts.
Right.
And then when I've set the goal for years of trying to get on television. I would test for stuff, not get jobs and things and this and that. And then when I finally do get a job, it's The West Wing. It's not like I read the script and said, you know what, this is the one I'll do. And you know what, call up Aaron Sorkin and John Wells and tell them yes.
You had to work at it. You had to audition. You had to make this happen.
I wanted a job, but I had about maybe 2 months left of money left to pay my rent. So I just wanted a job. I mean, I don't care whether I'm thankful it was the West Wing on NBC, but if it was on UPN, if it was anywhere, if it was what?
WB, CW.
Yeah, what was that? PAX TV?
PAX. That was it. Is that still around?
I don't know if it's still around, but like anything on television I would have done.
Isn't it amazing how when you're younger, I didn't give a shit. They're like, hey, we're going to do a spec commercial. What's that?
Cool.
It's not a real commercial. We're going to try and sell it and make a real commercial, right. But we'd like to use you, and you're not getting money, and you're going to show up, right. And you're paid for your own lunch. And I do it.
Right.
Because I'm thinking in my head, that's going to become the biggest thing ever. I always thought all these little things, which it's all part of it. And mm-hmm. then you get older, and you're kind of like, I don't want to do those little things as much.
Well, because you did it already. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you kind of did it. But where did that ambition go? For me, I'm talking to myself right now.
Oh.
I got so excited when I was younger about everything. What is that?
You had to create real estate for the podcast, man. Am I right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Maybe
Rob,
so.
Rob knows I'm right.
Yeah. You knew your strengths, maybe. Maybe you didn't want to do this, but he went on to direct and write and do all these things. And you're like, I want to act. I want to dance. Did you want to direct? Did you want to do all that?
I still don't have a real ambition to direct. I mean, over time, I would like to produce more because I think I just like that side of the business. But I don't have an ambition to really direct or to write.
See, I think that's
you know, for me, I enjoy doing theater. I want to do more theater. I want to find more opportunities where I can dance because I really enjoy tap dancing. I want to keep spreading out the breadth of what I'm doing. You know, Gus is a character. Charlie's a character. What I'm doing now, Alex Williams is a character.
Suits?
I want to keep just expanding it out. Because for me, it's less about just doing television, like keep doing the same thing over and over again. I really am trying to create something that over time that people will look at and say, the breadth of the work that he has done is very impressive. Like, wow, he did this and he did that and he played this guy and he played that guy and then he danced here and then he sang here and then he did this comedy, he did this drama.
Yeah. How important is it? That's interesting you say that because like when you were speaking just now and you had passion, but you were thinking, well, people will think this and people will think that and people will think this. And how much is that really for you that you love doing this? Because sometimes it gets expression. Convoluted.
Well, it's expression because an artist
expresses. Want people to respond. As an artist, you...
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's like, yes, I dance for myself, but when I dance, I'm sharing something.
That's right.
Yes, I act for myself, but when I want to take you on an emotional journey.
Yeah.
So that's why when I say when people look at it, I want them to be on this journey with me of like, wow, the work affected in different ways. The way Psych has affected people in a certain way. The way West Wing has affected people in a certain way. The way people who have experienced has been in a dynamic where I'm dancing. It's all energy. It's all affecting people. It's in isolation, if it's just me in a room by myself doing it, it's a wonderful thing. But if it's just that, then it's just for myself.
Yeah.
As soon as I step out the door and I put it on the screen, put it on the stage, put it on wax, put it anywhere, it then becomes a two-way street. There is an interaction happening here as an artist and the person receiving it.
Right.
It's not just about me.
I think it's really great. Did you ever have that feeling, I want to be a star? I want to be this. I want to be... You guys never... You both shaking your head immediately. Rob?
No.
Yeah, I know that. I knew that answer. Was there never I want to be a star. I want to make money. I want fame. I want this. Or was it always art? Honestly, was it always art?
I was ready, man. I was ready to do... To be a somewhat anonymous New York theater actor, because I felt like that's why I started acting. I fell in love with theater first, and I think that it's there's a purity, and I think there's a dignity to that road, and I don't know.
I mean, for myself, I would say it's not that I wanted to get on television, and I want to do films, and I want to be on stage. But the idea of being a star, or I want to be that guy. I want to walk into a room and everybody knows me. I want to walk down the street and the world is cheers to me. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
That has never been an ambition for myself. I want to be able to play roles that are exciting and engaging and challenge me and scare me.
I'm not going to lie to you. Yeah. I've had that. I've certainly had where I'm in college and I'm doing plays and I did Broadway, off Broadway, and way the fuck off Broadway, New Jersey Broadway, and you know, we've all done that.
Rob, can you go on Broadway.com and see what's playing way the fuck off Broadway right now?
Rob, you don't actually have to do that. It's called sarcasm and belittling. No, but there was a time where it's like, oh my God, I love Reservoir Dogs. I want to be in that. I want to be in the Oscars someday. I want to be fucking. I want to be a fucking famous. I want to be. But I loved acting at the same time. I loved what I was doing, but I wanted to sort of be famous. There were those moments, and as I got older, I started to realize sort of what was really important, right? And so now I don't have that feeling anymore like I used to. I want to be famous. I just feel like I just want to be happy. I want to do things that make me happy. I want to be around people, surround myself that people that make me happy. Yeah. Do you think? Anyway, that's just.
I also had tremendous social anxiety when I was a younger man, and the idea of fame or celebrity was terrifying.
All right, this is where I want to go now. Okay, you just hit it because this is always goes. Gets into therapy. That's where I hope it goes into. I hope it goes into anxiety. And we can edit this down to like just the anxiety. Because everybody deals with it.
Yeah.
Jennifer Love Hewitt was just on and...
She goes by Love.
Love. And she's amazing. And it was amazing to hear her story and then like all these people. And how do you deal with anxiety? How did you deal with anxiety? Did you get anxiety while you were working?
Never.
Have you been on set with...
Never while working. It was, for me, it was pretty intensely, like, sort of myopically exclusive to outside of work, to upfronts, TCAs, photo shoots, interviews, all that kind of stuff.
Podcasts?
Podcasts weren't around back then.
It was a joke. Right?
And the first, And the
this is a good one.
And yeah, the early years of Psych were obviously a huge blessing, but also a struggle for me, sort of on the side. And you judge yourself, and you feel silly because it's like, oh, my life, I'm on a show that people love, and I have to go and promote it. You know, poor me. Like, how can I possibly get through this? And from the outside looking in, it's such a ridiculous champagne problem. But the truth of the matter is, like, I don't like taking pills, and I didn't know exactly how to push through that. And I owe a lot of my evolution in that area to Dulé, and he knows this. He really sort of carried the Psych, that side of Psych for the first handful of seasons while I was sort of figuring out how to not be a disaster.
So my question was, and you just answered it, was how aware were you of this, that this was going on, that he really didn't, it's not that he didn't like it, he just didn't feel comfortable doing these things.
I was very aware because he said it.
Did he say it on air?
No, I mean, like, oh,
he said it to you.
Do this thing.
Dulé, please do this. Dulé, please do this interview.
I mean, it wasn't rocket science. It's like, okay.
Cool. Did you ever go, why is he getting anxiety? This is cool.
No, because I got that. I mean, years ago, I'd done a guest spot on a sitcom. I walked to do my work. My head would be down, walked out, did my scene, walked off. The audience is all right there. I'm not paying them any mind. I'm just minding my own business. I'm coming to do my job. And I remember my manager, my agent came to me afterwards and said, you were great on the show, but Dulé, you didn't interact with anybody at all. And I'm like, no, I'm here to do the work. Yes, Dulé, but like, they kind of explained to me, these people are the reason why you have a chance to do the work. They're here sitting inside the studio because they want to engage you. You have to, it's more than just going and doing the lines. And I was like, well, that's not me. They said, well, you have to figure out a way to reconcile that within yourself because that's what a part of this is. Not saying you have to be the, you know, the yak, yak, yak guy, but you have to find a way to open up to people because that is a part of it. It took me a long time, but over time I figured out just how can I still be comfortable within myself and still engage people.
Yeah.
So I understood that when you get into a room full of people and it's like, I don't want to talk to all of you.
I overcompensate. Yeah. I think my whole life I've overcompensated. I think I never truly feel, and this is a surprise probably to everybody, but I think that if they know me well enough, they realize I feel like I have to be the center of attention or just be funny and be on because being me, that's how I felt for years, isn't enough. And if I just am in the room, I feel like I'm like being judged. So I feel like, I'll be quick. I'll be witty. I'll be this. I'll be that. I'll be like, and then I'm fucking exhausted. And I'm like, what am I doing? Why do I do it? And then, you know, my therapist says, that's part of you. This is who you are. You're an entertainer. I'm like, even when I go on set and I'm in every scene of the day, I want to go out and talk to Ron, the fucking car washer, and go, Ron,
Why are you using so much energy? You have four scenes left, and you're rocking on with Ron the car washer. And so I never have understood this. I go to therapy. I deal with this. I remember my manager who I fired years ago, and I've only been with like two managers in my life. He says, you got to go to the Golden Globes. I'm like, well, that's funny because I don't think the show I'm on is in the Golden Globes. I don't think we got nominated. He's like, well, I think it'd just be really good for you. I'm like, good for who? I'm not in anything. I'm just going to show up. I think being seen as a guy who's not on a show that's not fucking nominated, this is where I should go. They're like, listen, I'm your man. Show up in places where the paparazzi are. You need to be seen. Oh, stir some drama. Do something with your life. And I don't. You won't see many pictures. You won't see many. I don't show up. You know, you hear about those actors who call up and go, Dule Hill will be at the Snots Berry Farms over on Melrose for lunch. Whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's you calling, obviously. Yes, and then they're taking
pictures. I didn't know I sounded like that, but yes. Okay.
Well, you put on a voice.
Thank you.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Thank
that's
you,
right.
James.
I guess this is.
This is not Dule Hill. This is not Dule Hill.
Be you pretending you're calling in to, you know, to TMZ
mm-hmm.
or and make the call.
Hello. Yes. This is TMZ. This is TMZ. Yes. This is not Dule Hill. I'm just letting you know that I'm going to be at Lookout Mountain over there, looking out on the mountain.
It's still pretty silky though. Still,
yeah. Now, give me yours, still, James.
I would go to something that was ridiculous, you know, that they might not even understand what I was saying. And but they just get the name.
TMZ, can I help you?
Yes. My name is Franz Fromm.
Okay.
You should know that Real Food Daily, Raw Day. Goodbye.
I can understand you.
Yeah, how do you get them to be there if they can't understand you, though?
That's why nobody ever shows up, you guys.
Rob, give me yours.
You mean when you make me call restaurants for you?
I've never done that, ever. But this would be mine. Hey, TMZ, hey, it's Michael Rosenbaum. Yeah, I was on the show. Yeah, I'm going to be at Burger King at 2. So I don't know what you guys are up to. But if you got nothing better to do.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, that's funny.
Oh, so look.
But, you know, going back to like being in a room full of people or whatever, being engaging people, if I make it about you, then it allows me to be more comfortable about myself being here.
Right.
It's about you. Like, hey, what's happening? And the fact of you wanting to talk to me, I'm giving you, like, I'm with you in this moment. Like, right. Here we are. What do you want to talk about? I'm curious about what's going on in your life or even what this moment is. Instead of me being in my head about me standing here in a room full of people, talking to people I don't know.
So you're present.
I guess that would be the word.
You're being present.
Yes, I guess that would be the word.
Which I am learning over the last couple of years. Do you guys meditate?
I don't.
I mean, meditation is a wide thing. Do I pray? Yes. For me, I feel like a lot of my meditation is like when I'm in the studio just dancing, because I just zone out and I'm in my own world, and whatever is going on inside of me, I can just be.
What's that for you?
It's probably a combo. It's a mashup of 3 minutes of cryotherapy and
explain cryotherapy in like 10 words.
Freezing yourself for 3 minutes.
Is it brutal to start out doing that?
Depends on what your relationship is with the cold. I love it. So it's a place where I can literally go and be at peace for 3 minutes. But yeah, it's like negative 250 degrees or something crazy.
And you sink, you go in and out, in and out?
No, you just stand in like you stand in a box, like a freezer, basically.
And is it dangerous?
It's not dangerous. If you stay in for too long, it would be dangerous.
So 3 minutes.
3 minutes, they're there to open the door and make sure that you're okay and you can leave at any time. And it's great for cell regeneration and
stress.
Getting old.
How about neck issues?
Absolutely. I would recommend it highly for anything muscle related.
Can you give me, like, if I email you, you tell me where to go?
Absolutely.
And I'll probably be a little anxious on the first time.
Yeah.
So could I maybe do 3 seconds instead of 3 minutes?
You could the least you can do while still getting the benefits, I think, is a minute and a half. So you'd have to hang for 90 seconds.
I can't have an ice cube in my mouth for 5 seconds. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's cold. It's so cold.
Yeah, but that's a very happy, healthy place for me. And so is the, you know, 20 minutes a day that I dedicate to my fantasy sports lineups.
You don't go to therapy?
Not a therapy.
Never have.
No.
Never once.
That's not true. I've done some couples therapy.
Couples therapy. Do you think that helped?
Absolutely.
Are you a good listener?
I like to think of myself as a pretty good listener, yeah.
Are you a good listener, Dulé?
Yeah, I think I am.
Rob, is Rosenbaum a good listener?
No, he's a terrible listener.
I think it was a yes or no answer. I don't know if terrible was needed to be in there. You know, if you ask, you know, the girl I'm hanging out with, hey, is Michael good and bad? She could easily say, yeah or no. She doesn't need to say terrible or...
It's tough to be
quick
a good,
would
it's,
be fine.
It's tough to be a good listener when you're overcompensating. That's fair to say, right?
Is it? But you know what? I am trying to become a better listener. Here's the thing. I'm the best listener. I'm the best friend, family member you could have when you really need me to listen.
Okay.
When it's really important, it's sort of like these trivial, I won't say trivial, but sort of, what's the word? Things that really
don't matter.
Sure. If somebody's just going like, you know, she's like, you know,
but they matter to me, Rosenbaum.
But they can't matter all the time.
Do you have a little bit of ADD? Is that
yeah?
Part of it? Well, that's not really your fault, then, man.
But doesn't everybody say they have ADD? But I do.
I think it's a super real thing.
What do you think? Do you think I have ADD?
I mean, I have a best friend who has it, and I don't bother telling him meaningless stuff. That's you just sort of learn, like
just don't talk to him unless you have something to say.
Yeah, unless
it's been 5 years. How are you, man? I just want to invite you to my wedding.
Yeah, well, you say stuff that's meaningful. You know,
how old are you?
I'm 42.
You're 42. You're
43.
43. You're married.
Mm-hmm.
This is your second marriage.
Yes.
First one lasted a while.
Yes.
And that just didn't work out in the end, obviously. You don't talk anymore.
Well, with my ex?
Yeah.
No, not really.
I mean, there's no reason to talk to
your ex, right? Yeah, there's no love loss. Like, it's all is well in the world.
All is well in the world.
What am I going to do? Hey, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on? Just want to check on you. I mean, stupid question.
At
James?
This point in life, at this point in life, you know, we both have gone on to the next chapter of our lives and living happy lives.
I just can't, like, I want to get married. Rob's married. James, you've never been married.
No, sir.
Do you think you'll get married?
If it has to be like a betting answer right now, I would probably lean towards no.
Why is that?
The institution of marriage is not something that I necessarily feel like I need to check as a box. I guess if I met somebody who was like, okay, this is my person, and it was very important to that person that we be married, sure. It's not a dragon that I'm going to chase, I guess.
I think we have that in common where it's like, you know, I'd love the idea of being with someone forever. That'd be great. I mean, it's scary and it's like, oh my God, forever is forever, right? That's like, you know, but I think like when you meet somebody and you're like, hey, this feels right. And so maybe it just hasn't felt exactly right.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just, there's part of me that just worries about, God, are you going to be 75 years old shitting your pants and, like, no one's going to be cleaning up for you? Not that she has to, but, like, I'd clean her shit up. I'm just saying it's reciprocated. Yeah. I'm just saying someone who's there for you.
I think oftentimes, though, people get focused on getting married instead of being focused on
finding
the relationship. Because as you were just saying, Rhoda, I think as you are in the relationship that is fulfilling all those things. You're full. You're being fed. Life is good. You know, it's like, no, we're in this. We're on this journey. I have no desire to be anywhere else besides right here every day, all day. Yeah. You know, for all the days that I'm allowed to be here on this earth. Then at that point, the idea of it is not as daunting.
So you don't think forever. You don't think 50 years. You don't.
I mean, for me,
I think that. Why do that
to yourself? At this point, yes. At this point, I'm like, me and Jazz, like, we in it to the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's otherwise, why would I get married?
Right.
You know what I mean? And now there are times where people do that and it doesn't work out. But I think when you find that person where it's like, here we are, it makes it easier to then take that step into marriage. If I'm not sure whether you're going to be around or whether this is going to work out, then I could see where it would be a bigger challenge to take that step.
What are the signs? What are the signs you look for in a partner? What are the red flags that you just have? Do you have a propensity for going towards women that you need to help fix a little and they help you fix? If you fix each other and you work on each other, or do you like someone who just kind of has their shit together? Who do you normally go out with?
I don't want somebody whose source of happiness is going to be a relationship with me. You know, I would love to I would love to supplement someone who already has a thing that they know they could be happy doing. And then if we can figure it out, I'll just make it better.
Is it hard to stay in something? Have you ever had where it's so passionate and so fun and the other side could be so bad, but for some reason it's better than
a little too boring and fine. And would you rather have passion and fire and fun and do everything with this person, but also there's a side of it that just kills you? Or sort of like normal, fun, sex is fine.
I would think passionate.
I mean, you always go passionate, even with the little bit like, well, this is going to kill me.
Well, no, I don't want to
kill me.
I'm trying to die.
But, you know, I'm asking. Yeah. You know what I'm saying, though?
Yeah, I would tend to go towards passion. I mean, when you're, for lack of better words, bland, like it's like, okay, after a while, it's like, okay, this would be boring after a while. This would just be like, okay, redundant. But I think you want someone who's alive and engaged and has opinions and thoughts and will have their strong point of view, even if it doesn't necessarily mesh with your point of view. Otherwise, it's...
What if that's not realistic, their point of view? What if their point of view just kind of makes you, just confuses you?
I mean, but you have to know the difference between passionate and crazy. Because if your point of view is not realistic, that means you're crazy. You see what I'm saying?
I do.
So there it is. Then that's on you. It's like, well, then, no, you're not talking about passion at that point. I just noticed you have the leg from A Christmas Story.
Yeah.
Come on, man. That's what I'm talking about right there.
Yeah. It's only like $35. I can get you one.
Oh, wow.
Not Rob, send him an email for that. Will you please? Yeah.
We'll get you one.
The Christmas.
Yeah.
We'll get you one.
Yeah.
James, you want to add on that or you think he wrapped that up?
No, I think I'll just enjoy it when I'm at Dulé's house.
No, not the Christmas Story. Oh. The leg. No, not the leg. I'm talking about the...
Make no mistake, Rudy. I was not offering you a leg lamp. That's not what happened.
I have a feeling, James, you do go out with passionate people.
I can't do the kill me part anymore.
You did that for a while.
I've done it a couple times.
And how exhausting is that?
I can't. It's debilitating, and I feel like it gobbles up real estate that I need for other stuff.
And doesn't it just... exhaust you mentally and emotionally to the point where you're like, I don't know if I could do anything else.
Yeah, it does. So I can't do that anymore. And part of that's probably age too. Like my energy is finite, you know? And here's the thing, like I have so many outlets for my passion as an artist. I don't know that I necessarily need that out of a relationship. I agree with Dulé. I want an independent thinker who's passionate about their own thing and you know, who attacks life for their own reasons. But I don't know that I need to come from what I do, which is already sort of exists at a heightened level, into a relationship that matches that. You know, that I don't necessarily think that I require.
Do you need to date someone who's really smart?
Yes.
Yeah.
Both of you answered that, right?
Oh, yeah. You have to be with somebody. Yeah.
Rob?
Yeah. What about you, Michael?
Well, I mean, those of you out there, you couldn't hide it.
It was so thinly veiled. Like, it was so honest.
No, here's the problem.
Rob, when he asked the question, had like this smirk on his face, like he already knew the answer.
No.
Oh, my God.
I'm saying that. I think every woman I've dated is smart. Here's the problem. I don't think I'm that smart. So that's what I was thinking. I'm like, do they have to be smart? Well, I'm like, I'm thinking I'm not that smart. So that's a... That's a really good response, to be honest with you. It's tough. And as I get older, I start to think, you know, I start to let more shit go. Where I used to be like, red flag gone.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy, gone. But now as I'm older, I'm like kind of tired. I don't really want to like date a lot. I don't want to like, it's hard. I let go of things like, you know what? I'm sure a lot of girls do that.
Here's something that I learned a couple of years ago, and I came up with this thing where I said, I have a box. Like, once you show me a part of you that I know does not work for me,
out.
I put you in that box, and you will never come out of that box concerning me.
Always. So one thing happens, you go...
If you show me something, I'm like, okay, before I was talking about, that's someone who's crazy then at that point, right. If their point of view is not realistic. So if they're doing something where I'm like, no, to me, that's something that really is crazy, how you're coming at me or how this thing is going down, how you're...
Not normal.
Yeah, it's
not
normal.
Not for me.
I'm like, you know what? You're in that box, and I have to remember that because it's not going to change. That's who you are.
Yeah.
And that's okay for you to be who
you are. Sometimes you need to see it twice, though.
Well,
sometimes you've got to see that twice, or sometimes 20.
Sometimes you, I mean,
20 times.
For me, in my life experience, I'm like, no, once I've seen it.
You're good. You're mature.
You know what? Here you go. It's not for me.
James,
this dynamic is not for me.
Can you say, that's not good for me, I got to get out of here, but you don't, do you?
I'm certainly guilty of that.
Well, I didn't say you got to get out. I didn't say I would necessarily get out of there right away. You know what I mean? I just would know it's only going to go so far.
Okay.
I know for myself, there's limits I'm putting on this dynamic because right. I've seen this, and I'm not going to just like jump off the, like walk out the door right now or jump off the cliff right now, but we're only going to go so far because I'm seeing
but
things
why,
that,
but why even go so far if you know that it's not going to work out?
Because at that time, that's all I wanted to do.
Like you're just enjoying this and you know what it is yeah. and you get out when yeah. you can you do that now?
I'm so stuck up on like I'm so stuck on not creating a double standard that's where I get into trouble. Because I'm so acutely aware of my own shortcomings and how difficult I am to be with. And
why are you difficult?
I think I'm a little 1 foot in, 1 foot out by nature. And
it drives people crazy.
It drives people, and I shake it all about. And it fairly drives anybody a little bit batty. You want a certain level of security and comfort out of any relationship, something. And I think I probably it takes me way too long to provide that. And I always know that like I'm constantly being forgiven for my own shit. So while I can certainly identify stuff that like isn't great. Or doesn't work for me, like I immediately turn the looking glass on myself and go, but look at the shit that she's putting up with from you.
Yeah.
And that's where I get stuck in like not being able to leave sometimes because it's like, well, you should be so lucky
yeah.
to have someone who's willing to look past all of the stinky shit that you're bringing to the
table.
That's
so true, isn't it?
And then that's where you get stuck. But the reality is, the truth is, it's probably best for both of you to just identify that it doesn't work. And save each other a lot of time.
Are you, Rob, I'm going to ask you this too. Are you one of those guys that's quick to say, I love you?
No.
Are you, Delay?
No.
Rob?
No.
It takes a while? Are you usually like, it's real?
I'm not free with it. Like, I don't
throw it around. I'm not free with it either.
I don't like throw it around.
No.
So for me, like, for example, with Jasmine, it didn't take me long to say it, but I don't say it often.
So even now what, you're married?
No, I'm saying...
Yeah, I love said, you. Okay.
It's funny. I haven't said I love you to her since, let me see, that was maybe like 2010. But no, it's not like in previous relationships, I would just say I love you all the time.
Right.
So, for example, when I did tell her that I loved her,
it meant something.
It meant something to me.
Yeah.
That the fact that I could say that and really mean it. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
Yeah, so.
I do. All right.
Yeah, I think I love you. I promise. Forever. I mean, these are things that have been bastardized to the point where, like, these words don't even mean anything to me anymore. Hearing them or saying them. So, to say it, you only say it for one reason, I think, and that's if you are 100% like your whole heart. Here it is. Take it. Otherwise, you just fucking. You're gonna fuck with somebody, or you're gonna fuck yourself up. Like, why are you throwing that out there?
You know, I feel like you guys. We do like a therapy session where it's just. Sort of like observing you guys for the last hour and then you observe me. And I'm kind of thinking like, if you were my therapist, or if I was your therapist, I would say to you guys, it seems like you know who you guys are. You know who you are. And that's what that comes across pretty clearly for me. And that's.
Well, we're not that young anymore, right. Dude. Like,
but I think there's a lot of people who still don't know what exactly they're.
That's true. I think in life, you just have to be honest with yourself. You have to like really hold up a mirror. It's very easy to look at other people and see all the faults in other people, but you also have to be able to really take hold up a mirror to yourself and like, no, Dulé, you were bugging right there. No, Dulé, that's you and your idiosyncrasies and all that kind of stuff, and you got to deal with that.
Or how about looking in the mirror and saying, why are you with this person? What's wrong with you?
Yes.
That you, what fucking signs do you need?
Yes.
What, who need, your therapist told you this. Why don't you get it? And then you start to say, what's wrong with me? Have you experienced that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm usually operating from a place of knowing exactly what I need to do and then just taking too long to find the spine to get it done.
Yeah.
It's rarely am I in a place of confusion where I'm just like, I don't know, I think, but I'm not. I usually know exactly what I should do.
And you just let it linger like and a cranberry song.
Yeah, God, may she rest. That was a tough one. That was a tough one for me,
dude,
man.
I sat on Mulholland and I pulled over when I heard it in my truck and I cried.
Yeah,
I called my friend Shira and I cried like you ugly cry.
Yeah.
That because that to me was college. That was
senior year of high school, freshman year of college in a big way.
Big way. I went to see them alone at Jones Beach in New York. I loved Dolores. And it broke my heart because my dream was always to see the Sundays, Mazzy Star, and the Cranberries together.
Yeah, the Sundays are my favorite band of all time.
Dude, the Sundays are like one of my favorite bands of all time. I listen to them every day.
All time.
I see a BFF.
Dude, horror movies right now, and Sundays? You know, are you kidding me?
Sundays.
James, we got to find the Sundays. Dude, they got to reunite.
The Sundays are a rare one, man.
They'll never play. The guitar player, I think, and the lead singer, they got married, and then they had two kids.
They never enjoyed touring in the first place. They were weird, shy people.
People see, weary of me,
showing my good side.
This is getting weird. Rob, I don't know about you, but I'm just starting to feel it.
Yeah, a little bit. Should we leave?
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
Sorry. Look, by the way, this has been a real treat. And you know what? We didn't even get this. I like this because we just got into some real stuff. Mm. And I like that. And I think that people will like that about you guys because, you know, it's like Psych questions and West Wing questions and Dukes of Hazzard questions. And
there's no reason for you to go there. There's just like there was no reason for Rob to say terrible.
thanks for the callback. What's one movie at Melody Pond PhD? Quickly, what's the one movie guaranteed to make you laugh?
Guaranteed to make me laugh? Coming to America.
Give me one quote.
Friday.
Give me one quote from Coming to America.
She is the queen to me.
James.
God is a God somewhere. Is that one?
I love it.
I know Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King. You know what I'm saying?
Your favorite. Mine's, you know, I love the movie Life.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Oh,
yeah.
The prison one.
Yeah, I just love that. Mm-hmm. Maybe I ought to eat your cornbread. Oh, you can't have my cornbread. Second part of this killing spree. The spoon was sharp enough, I'd stab motherfucker. Go ahead, James.
The real genius will always make me laugh.
Wow, little Val Kilmer.
Always. Yeah.
Love it. Thanks for that question.
You didn't ask him for a quote.
Oh, quote. You, James.
Are you Chris Knight? I hope so. I'm wearing his underwear.
Very good. Very good. Rob?
I don't even.
You don't.
Impastor.
Funny. A show that lasted two seasons I did. This guy, all he does is fucking cream me. I give him a microphone because I go, you know what? You'll be, just, you know, be there. He's not there. Last question. Peter, at Peter Lee 25, favorite aliases from the series Psych, favorite guest appearance, how much interest did you have in a Psych Monk crossover as hinted in the finale? I don't know if you want to answer any of that.
That's a lot of questions. Gus Silly Pants Jackson.
Jimmy Simpson, Ali Sheedy.
I thought you were going to say Val Kilmer.
Yeah, I could have tied it up nice.
Yeah.
Wait, Val Kilmer was on Psych?
Val Kilmer was in the series finale.
He did a quick, we had a character, what was it? Why am I blanking on the
Dobson?
We had a character that you would never see for eight seasons. It would be like,
and it was him?
You would address him off camera, Dobson, and keep on going. And you never knew who he was.
He said something?
He had one line, and it was, and with one line, we were like, oh, Val's been in the precinct the whole time.
It was great. Like that, to me, like that was like the greatest of all.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing how many guest stars, the great guest stars would come on because they just wanted to do the show. They loved it so much.
Yeah, we got really lucky.
That had to make you feel good, though, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Great.
This has been an incredible treat for me. I thank you for allowing me to be inside of you both at the same time.
Again, I still feel weird when you say that.
You're going to want to see a doctor soon, though.
Yeah. Real quickly, just tell me your handles. You know, people like to know the handles. Your Twitter and Instagram.
At Dulé Hill. Nice and easy.
Yeah, at James Roday.
That's pretty basic.
Yeah, really.
Rob, I don't care.
at Rob Hollis.
Yeah. Oh. If you want to say hello to Rob, you're doing Ballers. You're doing Suits.
I'm not doing Ballers. I'm not in season four of Ballers. I'm doing Suits.
You're still balling though.
Yeah. But I'm still balling though.
Still balling.
Yeah. I'm doing Suits. We come out July 18th, season 8.
You don't like wearing suits, and you're in a show called Suits.
Here's the funny joke. The funny joke is, you know, I went to school at Seton Hall University. I was a business finance major. I was going to go off to law school. Eventually, I dropped out of Seton Hall my junior year and rolled in the arts, studied at William Esper in New York, and became an actor. But the reason why I didn't go to law school was because I realized how hard it was going to be, first of all, like bookwork, and I didn't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to wear suits every day. So I was like, I don't want to go to the office and wear suits every day. Now I'm on a show called Suits about corporate lawyers and I have to wear a suit every day. make plans, God laughs.
Ain't life a bitch? What movie is that from?
I don't know.
Ain't life a bitch? If you Last Boy Scout.
I was going to say, if you say it twice, it doesn't really
Remember
make
with
me...
the football helmet? And he blows himself away. James, you just directed a movie?
Yeah, that movie...
Can't really say anything about
it. It's currently called Treehouse. I don't know if it'll stay called Treehouse, but it'll drop in March for International Women's Day on the Hulu.
And you're always directing. You're always directing
I was directing, but you know what? Curveball, I did a pilot this year, and it got picked up. So I'm off to Vancouver, my old stomping grounds, in a couple weeks to do a series called A Million Little Things.
That's right.
That's right.
On ABC.
Dude, yeah. Congrats.
So I'll be back on TV in the fall attempting not to embarrass myself.
Well, James Rodé Rodriguez.
Thank you, sir.
Half Mexican, half Irish.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Bienvenidos a los Estados Unidos. Dulé
Hill, all black, all man.
Thanks, folks. Hope you enjoyed this one. I did.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.